One of the great things we love about the holiday season are the movies. They provide us with an opportunity to celebrate with our friends and family without actually having to interact with them. But closer to our hearts are movies that use Christmas as a backdrop to stories about fighting, fear, wild sex, and murder.
Today, Peaches Christ joins us to take a look at some of our favorite movies you may not realize take place during Christmas. Listen as we talk about movies like Showgirls, Rocky IV, and Harold and Kumar's 3D Christmas.
Creepy Christmas films like Jack Frost, Black Christmas, and Rare Export.
And a special sneak peek at Peaches' new project.
Plus, a family's Christmas tree turns out to be a humongous marijuana plant.
Russia lights up the Eye of Sauron to watch over Moscow for the holidays.
Are gremlins racist?
And Kirk Cameron's Saving Christmas becomes the most hated film of all time.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Attention all non-basic queens, attention all non-basic queens, show how fierce and fabulous you are with our drag queen inspired t-shirts.
Reading is fundamental.
Hunty.
The shade is strong with this one.
And Shantae. Fabulous fashion for guys and gals with charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Available at feastoffun.com/store.
Hello?
You better watch out. You better. Oh. Hi, Peaches. Ho, ho, ho,
Merry
honey.
Christmas.
Put your felching straw down. It's time to podcast.
Oh, I don't use a straw.
She's all natural.
Oh.
She gives you that brown
How
Christmas.
How else are you going to get that good stuff from way down deep inside?
Why are you accusing Peaches of being a felcher?
My suction abilities are legendary.
I don't remember when Peaches first suggested the idea of a felching straw, but it's something that's kind of stuck with me. And then when I saw your that thing you did with Lady Bear with World of Wonder, what is it, Cash Friends? What's the name of that thing you did?
Friends for Cash.
Friends for Cash.
Besties for cash.
Besties
hit with the lingo. Mm-hmm. That's what the youth of America mm-hmm. call their close friends.
Besties. My bae.
But technically, isn't Lady Bear like your maid?
Lady Bear's an acquaintance, but we went on the show, you know, for the money.
For the $10.
I wouldn't actually call her, you know, like a friend.
One of my favorite things is like, what's her favorite cuss word? And you wrote felch face. And she just like, I'd never say that word, ever.
I have to say that you right now rank as the number one most entertaining video from World of Wonder's video blogging.
Ever.
Scene.
Aw, thank you.
But that's, you know, I mean, comparing it to like the early Alyssa Edwards videos are like, what's Alyssa's secret? I like popcorn. And then it's like, and you're like, well,
you know that sometimes I sit at home and I try to make that noise with my mouth and I still have not perfected it.
I can't do it either. I think it's the way the shape of my mouth or something.
Why can't you guys do that?
I don't know. I think I have a tight little palate.
I can't. I don't know. It's hard for
me. You just did it.
I want to be able to do it because I kind of do it. Like if you saw me in person, you'd be like, it's embarrassing watching me try to do it because I want to be able to do it, you know. As a loving mockery, you know, on stage or whatever, as Peaches, because I think it's actually really funny.
It's
and I love it
tacky.
When Alaska does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I can't do it.
So Mark and I went to the Kris Kringle
Market
in downtown Chicago. I'm not sure exactly why this is such a good idea to have, like, a Christmas bazaar.
Because it's fun.
In winter weather.
Because it's Christmas and that's when winter happens unless you're in Australia.
You know, should do it indoors or you know. All the people working these booths look really sad. And so we go up to this one booth and it was like, cuckoo whistles. And I was like, look, Mark, he's selling cuckoo whistles. And I got to grab one and start playing it. And there's this big sign says, ask for a demonstration. So I turned to the handsome young man and I said, would you mind giving us a demonstration? And he's just like pouting and sad. And he goes, All right.
And we were that like, was it?
That was it.
And that's our new cuckoo whistle.
And I was like, oh, great. Now I have to buy one from the sad sack.
It was only $5.
So well, I don't understand. They have a big outdoor Christmas bazaar in Chicago in the middle of December.
Well, yeah. this area of the country, there's a lot of German immigrants that came here, and so it's selling all sorts of German carved wood Kris Kringle Christmas stuff.
The weirdest thing about Germans is they sell French fries, Christmas French fries.
Well, it goes with your Wiener Schnitzel.
Really? Yeah, I was just like, what the fuck
when
is that?
When I was there, I remember a lot of German stuff, not so much in Chicago, but in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we went to a real old-timey German restaurant that was it looked like something out of Epcot Center.
Oh, yeah, it's the world famous, what's it called? Mayer's, right? I think is what it's called.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's world famous. So St. Louis, Chicago, and Milwaukee, I think they call it the German Triangle because there's a lot of German immigrants here.
But I'm Latino, so I love Christmas even more than white people do in the United States. I don't know if you knew that, Peaches, but Latin Americans, the ones who do celebrate Christmas, are fanatical about the holiday.
It's the Christmas season.
Well, I will be in Mexico for Christmas.
Ooh,
you will.
Yes.
Ay, caramba. Yeah.
Where are you going to be? Puerto Vallarta?
I am. Yes. I'm going to be in Puerto Vallarta for Christmas and New Year's.
You're going to bring your donkey dick act all the way down to Tijuana?
No, but I am going to bring Knee Hot.
Are you doing a show down there? Or is this a vacation getaway?
It's just a vacation.
Aww.
Which I'm actually really, really excited for because I feel like I've done more drag. I think I have. I think I've done more drag this year than any year of my life. It's just been nonstop. I was saying to someone earlier today, I'm like, oh my God, I caught a cold last week. And the last time I was sick was January. And I think part of why I hadn't gotten sick this whole year is because I haven't really stopped. You know, when your adrenaline and your momentum just keep you, healthy. Maybe it's a fake healthy. I don't know. But I am so looking forward to just sitting on a beach and doing nothing for a couple weeks.
Mm. So what you're saying is that inside you're rotting away.
No. Inside, yeah, I guess so in a sense. But, I think it's more my body's finally going okay, you're done.
How long are you going to be in Mexico for?
2 whole weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Because once you're there, it's not really that expensive. It's just getting there, this time of year that's really expensive. But once you're there, it's kind of like you might as well stay a while.
Mm-hmm.
I always imagine that when you travel on an airplane, you look like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Total Recall and drag.
Yeah, I don't understand that comment, and I saw where you posted that on Facebook, and I took great offense to it.
But because the 2 weeks lady from Total Recall does look a little bit like you in drag. What?
I'm not even going to bite. We can change the subject.
When did you post that?
Oh, a while back. We were Mark and I were really grooving
right
on
after
that.
We had seen each other. He was here. We had a lovely visit. Remember you and me and Curtis and your friend went in Knee Hot, we went to the park, and we had a lovely time. And not 24 hours later, Fausto posted this picture of this hideous woman with five chins that's Arnold Schwarzenegger in drag. And I knew what it was. I'm like, Fausto has, some weird fucked-up psychology where he can't really just enjoy a friendship. He has to piss people off.
He has to pick
it. It's like, yeah, it's like he has to know that, it's okay to upset someone or something.
I don't. I wasn't trying to upset you about it. I really love that character, and I love you.
Oh,
and I
please.
Wanted to say, look, it's this campy moment.
I love that character.
Everybody loves
girl.
Her. Yes. Ask people who are fans of Paul Verhoeven films. What's your one of your top five favorite moments? And they'll say it's the 2 weeks lady in Total Recall.
Now, when they did the remake of Total Recall with Colin Farrell, they used her again, but it was different.
It was so lame.
She was just the woman passing through.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see that one?
No, I never saw the remake. Yeah. I actually really like Total Recall.
Oh my God!
But I never saw the remake.
It's a camp fest. The remake is more authentic to the original storyline, from what I understand, which was anti-corporate
and boring.
Is it cold Chicago right now?
It's freezing.
No, actually, today it's 39 degrees. It's not so bad. It was cold last month, and then this month we're at normal. So this is because you were here around this time last year, weren't you?
Yeah, right.
That was way below normal.
That was freezing. My God, it was really, really harsh.
Well, I don't understand why you're harsh on me for the 2 weeks lady when Mark compares you to Divine in the Second City's Christmas special.
I didn't compare. I said that to... listen. Did you see SCTV's John Candy doing Divine as Peter Pan?
For Christmas.
Yeah. And so it was, a thing that they did like 20 some years ago, but it recently got, recirculated because Peter Pan was on NBC last week. And when I first saw the image, it was just kind of John Candy's face, but it was from a distance. It was blurred and it was the makeup. And I was just like, oh my God, is it Peaches? And I was just like, and I looked closer, it was John Candy. And it's because, your makeup is somewhat inspired by Divine. So you could easily see why.
That is true.
That's easily that see why true. I would be confused.
Not because of the thickness.
No, I need to see. Where you posted this or something?
I did not post it. I believe it was on Queerty. I didn't share it, and I didn't tag you and say, "Oh my God, is this Peaches flying around?" It's
so
wonderful.
How would I have known that?
Yeah.
He was asking me.
No. You know why?
Why?
It's because Fausto just brought it up. Just to needle me a little bit further.
I'm sorry, Peaches. Look, I thought Mark had posted that on social media. That's
did you? I did post this recently though. Did you see Divine and the Tales from the Dark Side, which was kind of like, I think it was like a Christmas episode because he kind of shows up looking as an Asian Santa Claus.
No, I haven't seen that.
It is so terrible. He's a guy, and he's coming from the land of Lo Pu, and so he's kind of like this Asian character, but like, and he comes to tell this boy he's the new Dalai Lama, and then there's a twist at the end. But it's one.
So it's not in drag.
It's not in drag, and it's one racist joke after another, and it's just like it's something that just wouldn't fly today. And it just,
I don't know,
there's something about Divine in this thing, too. It's like you could tell he was kind of uncomfortable in the role and just not very convincing. I'll send you the link so you can check it out.
I would love to see that.
So today I thought it would be really fun, and instead, because we always talk about movies with you, and I thought it would be a lot of fun to talk about movies that we love and adore, but people don't realize are actually Christmas movies. Like Showgirls.
Showgirls
starts off on Halloween. By the time she makes it big, it's Christmas time.
And when she's like filing her social security information with the receptionist Irene, mm-hmm. human resources Irene, mm-hmm. Irene turns to her and says, "Deceased." And in the background in Showgirls is a bunch of Christmas decorations. But if you watch it like on a VHS copy, like I did for many years, you'll totally miss the fact that this movie takes place mostly during Christmas.
But now you can see it in high def. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think of it. Because I do love to think about movies where a chunk of time is spent, around Christmas and turning it into kind of a Christmas movie, even though the film is not a Christmas movie. Like, I think a lot of people do that with Female Trouble, speaking of Divine, because of that fantastic Christmas opening with the cha-cha heels and the Christmas tree. But really, the movie has... I mean, there's just that one scene, really. That's it. There is no other Christmas. But it's a great movie to watch around Christmas time.
And in that scene, I guess Divine doesn't like what she gets for Christmas, right? Her parents give her a nice, sensible pair of shoes because nice girls don't wear cha-cha heels. And she gets so mad.
Exactly.
Does she kill them with the Christmas tree?
No. She just throws the Christmas tree on top of her mom. Her mom's still alive at the end saying, "Not on Christmas. Not on Christmas."
You know, the crazy thing was we've been shooting Cooking with Drag Queens here in Chicago. And I've been trying really hard not to capture Christmas decorations during this because the series will air later in the spring. And this one drag queen had this giant Christmas tree in her living room. And as we're filming it, I totally knocked it down and water went spilling everywhere.
Fausto's own War on Christmas.
Oh, yes. It was terrible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was she pissed?
She was a little, she's very nice. So, you know, she was like, oh, look, all our Christmas presents are ruined now. But that's okay. Don't worry about it.
Now, are you guys announcing who the queens are, or is that a surprise?
What do I look like, RuPaul?
Some of them have been announced.
Yeah, you want to know? I'll tell you.
Yes, please. I would like to know.
Trixie Mattel.
Lover.
Tranica Rex. Oh, wait a minute. Are we talking about RuPaul's? What? Who?
She said love her.
I said love her?
Oh, I thought you said I'm her lover.
Well, I've never actually met Tranica Rex in person. But I wouldn't rule it out.
Shea Coulee.
Dixie Lynn Cartwright.
Dixie Lynn Cartwright. I'm missing somebody, but.
Kim Chi.
She's the one that gets early eliminated. Because I can't remember her name.
Oh, really?
Off the top.
Oh, Teriyaki.
And Teriyaki. There we go. Yes. But there's other queens.
You have a lot of friends with Asian food names.
I know. We live in, like, basically gay people, if they live in Andersonville and they do shows in the boys' town, you have to drive through an Asian neighborhood every single day. So Asian culture is very much in the background. And guess what? Mark and I are getting married in July in a Chinese restaurant.
Again? You're getting married again?
What was such good publicity?
Well, we're going to have a party, you know.
We're having a party, a ring exchange ceremony, and you're all
Don't
invited.
Bring up the wedding in front
what?
Of Pete. She's still bitter. She
oh, she is?
Yes, I think.
I want to invite
her. So anyway,
her.
Cooking with drag queens.
I'm very openly bitter. I also was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, I was only asked to do this episode of Feast of Fun because Brian Sweeney canceled. And I was thinking, like, I'm constantly, you know, their replacement. Like Devin Green was the minister after you'd asked me to be your minister. So I just got, like, replaced. And now I'm the backup to Brian Sweeney not showing up for your podcast. I'm just liver around the Feast of Fun.
Peaches, you are a much loved and integral part of what we do here.
You're the only friend I have that is actually famous.
I'm obviously like so desperate for some sort of validation, I guess.
You are a goddess among drag queens.
Totally.
I mean, you I made it without RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's true.
Aw, thank you. Well, I mean, some of us had to. We started doing drag way, way, way before RuPaul's Drag Race ever existed.
I mean, you started doing drag right after Supermodel came out, right?
That's true, actually, yeah. I thought you were going to say something like, after Einstein discovered, you know...
No, but why aren't you and Heklita in that documentary about the aging drag queens in the Tenderloin?
Oh my God, that's so weird that you bring that up, because Nihat and I just watched it last night.
Yeah?
I guess we could be. I mean, you know, I was certainly watching it thinking like, well, this is the future, you know, staring me right in the face.
Well, you know what? It's better to grow old than not grow old. That's for sure.
Hey, and it's better to grow old, and I really actually admire those queens. Because, you know, I think if you're giving up drag because you think you're too old for it, but you don't want to give up drag, that's a sad thing. I'd rather stay young at heart and keep working until, you know, until I'm sick and tired of it. And one of the queens says that. I don't know if you watched the whole movie. She's like, yeah, sometimes I wonder if it's fun anymore. But for now, I guess I still think it's fun, and I'll stop doing it when it stops being fun. Because drag is a lot easier when you're younger.
Well, you know, sure. We learned a little technique from one of the older queens in Cooking with Drag Queens. I'll give you a little sneak peek as to what it is. Is when you get older, when you go to put on your makeup, it helps if your mirror is lower and you hold your face over the mirror, because then your whole face kind of sags forward and you're able to put the makeup on easier.
I would think it would make it harder.
No, she insists it's because it fills it out so you can get into all those wrinkles.
So in this case, gravity
really?
Becomes your friend, not
yes.
your enemy.
When you put it on your makeup.
Oh, my good.
Because otherwise, I don't know, it's just your face sags a different way.
I'm obsessed right now with taking care of my skin. That's my big thing.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I wear sunscreen every day. I've had these little mini chemical peels here and there this year. Yeah, because it's like, you know, you turn 40 and you see your face is changing. And, you know, any little thing I can do, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to feed your skin from the inside, too. You know, and have the
That's
right...
That's true. I've been trying to eat healthier, and I drink lots of water.
And what kind of supplements are you taking?
I don't take any supplements.
No vitamins?
No.
Uh-oh.
I probably should.
It was nice knowing you, honey. I really...
But, you know, I've read things about how, you know, it's all bullshit. I don't know what to believe.
Well, I don't, you know, it's...
Well, the best thing to do is to get your nutritional information from blogs where random people can post things.
And go to the comment section, because those are always filled with such intelligent things about
creatine.
About
more creatine!
I'm going to go to Amazon.com right now and buy this thing called hyaluronic acid serum.
Black people love... if you ask any black woman about hyaluronic acid, she'll know about it.
Really?
Yes.
And get
honey, because they say black don't crack, but the thing about it is that black women value their skin a lot and go through extreme lengths to protect it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to look into
that. Hyaluronic acid. Ask any sister.
H-Y-L-A-U-R-O-N-I-C.
So are we going to continue talking about Christmas
movies?
Edward Scissorhands takes place during Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that's a fantastic Christmas movie, for sure.
But a lot of people don't think about it. They think about it, they kind of associate it, even like The Nightmare Before Christmas, mm-hmm. everybody kind of associates it with Halloween, you know? But it actually is mostly a Christmas movie.
Did you parody that with, like, Edward Penis Hands?
No, we did I did do Edward Scissorhands as a Christmas movie, and then I did a stage show that was like a big Christmas sort of spectacular that was called The Nightmare We Call Christmas, and the whole... show was like a Tim Burton send-up and tribute. So it was like a variety show. So Alice in Wonderland was there, Edward Scissorhands was there, Ed Wood was there, you know, it was very bizarre. And it went really well. It was a great show. Well, I've only done a few big Christmas events. Another one was The Shining, because Martini and I always would watch The Shining at Christmas time. So we thought, let's do The Shining as a Christmas movie and do a Christmas show with The Shining. And that went really well. But in the last couple of years, I've decided to sort of try to take most of December off. So I've been doing my final show of the year the weekend before Thanksgiving. So Christmas stuff, event-wise, I think is really, really competitive and really tough. But I have some other ideas. Like, I always think of The Gremlins as being a great Christmas movie.
And I absolutely loved your makeup that you did the Halloween show with Heclina, and you did remember that one lady gremlin?
And you, it was Peaches Christ.
It was Peaches Christ. Girl, tell us
about
that makeup.
Yeah, but that was me and like 20 other drag queens did that costume this year, which was so insane. I would never, I mean, I guess, you know, I guess Bianca Del Rio mentioned it on Drag Race, and so put it out there in the zeitgeist, and myself and Fifi O'Hara and Yara Sophia and, I don't know, 5 other people did Girl Gremlin for Halloween.
Who wore it best?
I actually think that, honestly, if it depends on how you were looking at the costuming and stuff. I think Fifi O'Hara kind of won for just sheer drag version, because she actually managed to do it and look really, really pretty, like as Girl Gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sexy, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went more, you know, I'm Queen of Horror, so I went more for monstrous and had prosthetic reptilian tits made, and, you know, I had prosthetics coming off my face and stuff. So I don't know. I guess it depends on what aesthetic you like. I went more gross, and the other girls went more glamorous, I guess.
Do you agree or think there's any gravity to the criticism that black critics have against Gremlins, saying that it's a racial slur? That basically they're using fried chicken to feed the gremlins after midnight, and they turn into bad black people.
What?
And it was, and the that it's actually a movie about white people's anxiety of living of black people and living in an urban environment.
Well, you know, I'd never ever heard that before until I went to see Dear White People, and
I've read that before the movie.
Yeah, I'd never heard that before, and then when the person, like, in just a few sentences, because it was the fried chicken, you know, the fear of water, of getting their hair wet. there was a whole bunch of things, but once they were done the sentence, whatever it was, I thought to myself, like, you know what? I don't think that's too far of a reach. I could actually see how that made sense. But maybe the screenwriter didn't know that their sort of racist, you know, ideas about what's, you know, scary or whatever were coming through. But there was enough of an argument that I actually think it holds water.
It's fun because it's kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, like, when you think about it, you're like, oh, I guess it is kind of racist, isn't it?
Kind of. I mean, you know, I think even if it's not super intentional, I think artwork and stories and narratives, screenplays, movies, you know, they come from places, you know, they come from someone's head or their mind, and sometimes those connections are random, you know, but when there's like three or four of them that make sense like that, it's like, I don't know, I think it's a compelling argument, actually. I mean, I don't think it's a reason to maybe boycott the movie at this point, but I think it might be something interesting to look at as far as like the time period when the movie came out and what was going on. You know, at that time, like, you know, the great white flight of urban environments had already happened. And I feel like growing up a child of the 80s, I remember like a lot of racism was this sort of fear of black folks moving into communities or into suburbia. You know, like I remember white people being nervous that like a black family had moved into our neighborhood, you know, and luckily I had parents who thought that was really wrong and taught us not to be racist. But I certainly grew up around friends and people in, you know, in Maryland who were racist, you know? And I can see how a Gremlins sort of metaphor, you know, was there, you know, that played on people's racism. I could totally see that.
Oh, don't move into my neighborhood and chew on my electric cables and dress up like a hooker. I think actually the Gremlins 2 is the better movie of the right? Because that's the one with
it's not a better.
That's
movie.
The one with the lady gremlin in it, though.
No,
yeah, it is the one with the lady gremlin, and it's really fun, but it's definitely not a better movie.
Okay,
yeah, part one, it's pretty trashy and ridiculous. I mean, it's more of your cliched 80s sequel, you know, like cashing in.
Mm.
What is the lesson we can learn from my favorite Rocky movie, Rocky IV, where Ivan Drago, the Russian hunk, kills his friend Apollo Creed in the ring, and Rocky has to challenge the Russian champ to a fight, not just for his life, but for his country. And it takes place during Christmas, and even fights him on Christmas Day.
What's the lesson there? I don't know.
You know, in the beginning of the movie,
maybe
too.
Maybe that Christmas.
Do lots of steroids. Did it
come out at Christmas time?
Yeah, well, in the movie, ironically, both of them were on steroids and growth hormones, but Ivan Drago is portrayed as cheating because he's the one doing the steroids, and they actually like show him being injected with steroids. And then in the beginning of the movie, Rocky's family is so wealthy and so soft that they now have a robot dressed as Santa Claus to entertain them. Do you remember the robot?
I don't remember the robot at all.
There was a robot in a Rocky movie. People, watch it again.
But did you know Dolph Lundgren can sing and dance?
He's gorgeous, and he speaks perfect English. Oh, did you know how Dolph Lundgren got his showbiz career started?
How?
By fucking Grace Jones. He was dating Grace Jones, and he was cast in A View to a Kill as one of those super soldiers that the evil Germans Nazis have been engineering.
I'm sure he may have had a career in Sweden beforehand.
He was fucking Grace Jones, and then as soon as his career took off, he ditched her for Brigitte Nielsen.
Ooh.
So basically, Dolph Lundgren's penis makes women go insane.
I've been around penises like that before.
Yeah, I don't. I remember the movie like coming out, and I probably saw it, but I have no Like, I don't think that's something I ever watched again.
Peaches, do you have any desire to see Kirk Cameron's film Saving Christmas?
No. I don't even want to watch it to hate watch it.
Well, I watched the album art for it. It just seems like a parody of itself. It's Kirk Cameron swinging this giant candy cane, smashing all this Christmas stuff while he holds like a nativity scene close to his heart, because he's going to save Christmas, the real meaning of Christmas, which is, you know, the birth of the baby Jesus.
So I saw the trailer and I have to say it's like a tile. You know, some people think that Tyler Perry movies are not funny. This feels like a really unfunny Tyler Perry movie that's trying to be funny. And it's actually a comedy. And it stars Kirk Cameron, and where he's a well-meaning father who learns that Christmas really is about Jesus and not about presents.
Yeah. And so it's played over.
He's such an asshole.
Well, he's saying that like all the anti-Christian hate is making the movie more popular. But I don't know. According to Box Office Mojo, it's played on 294 screens, and it pulled in an average of $495 per screen.
Ouch.
So that means that about 33 people attended the weekend's 15 showings at all the different theaters. So no,
that's like three people at every show.
It's ridiculous.
According to Rotten Tomatoes, of their 100 movies, most hated movies of all time, guess what's number one right now?
All About Evil?
No.
Just kidding.
Kirk Cameron's Saving Christmas.
Whoa.
It's the most hated movie of all time. Whoa. And the most hated Christmas movie of all time. And it just came out.
Wow. That's a terrible thing. I was just kidding. Like, I love All About Evil. You can buy it. Can you buy All About Evil on iTunes?
No, you can't. You can stream it on our website, and you can buy it on Amazon on DVD, but not on iTunes.
All About Evil, now available on Amazon. Did you know one thing? They're retiring on RuPaul's Drag Race, according to rumors.
What's that?
RuPaul's laugh, iconic laugh with the bell at the afterwards.
There'll be no more laughter on.
There's no more ha 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 ding ever.
I think you ruined it.
I don't even remember that. When was that?
In the commercials, like in between RuPaul's Drag Race, and they go in and out of commercial.
Right, yeah.
She goes.
I'm not doing that anymore. How do you know that?
Just because I know things. Can't tell you why.
Oh, what else do you know? Spill the tea.
Well, Violet Chachki and Trixie Mattel are probably going to be in the top three, if not top five, and due to the fact that they become bitter enemies during the series. This is a spoiler.
Really?
Yeah. And Miss Fame and Pearl are, even though they're audience favorites, this I think is a little bit misleading or a bit false, because they're such strong contenders. It's hard for me to imagine them not making it all the way to the top, but World of Wonder loves to eliminate a famous queen in the first episode. They did
like
it
Kelly with Mantle.
Yeah, they did it with Kelly Mantle. They've done it before. And so there's rumors that actually Miss Fame gets eliminated the first episode.
Really? Wow.
But that's just a rumor, and it may not happen. So
I really don't know very much at all. I know one big thing, which I told you I knew, but I can't talk about. But other than that, I know nothing. I just know one thing.
Did you tell us
which
about
I'll talk
that one
to you
thing?
About. No, I told you that I absolutely could not tell you what it was.
I know things too, and I'm not going to tell you either.
Why are you telling us then? If you can't tell people, just don't tell them at all.
Because
I
want
you to
feel self-important.
Yeah, I want you to think that I'm like in the know. Hello.
Well, the thing is, like the drag queens, it's kind of like it's, you know, they all chatter and they're, you know, when they're putting on their makeup and they figure things out, and then gossip spreads, and it's, you know, it's like the telephone game. In the end, who knows what's real and what's not real?
It's true. Yeah, what did you predict last year that you owe Bob the Drag Queen a wig for?
Well, because it was a rumor that Courtney Act was going to win it and Bianca was not going to win it, and Bianca won it. And so I owe Bob the Drag Queen a wig because he knew that Bianca was probably going to win it.
And so who gets in a fight? It's Trixie Mattel and who else?
Violet Chachki. Yes. Violet Chachki is the bitch of the season. And even she embraces being a villain so much that out of drag, when she's in drag, she dresses up as a devil, reminiscent of the 1956 movie Santa Claus from Mexico, where Santa Claus fights a devil for Satan. The hearts of Satan. Well, Pitch is the devil he fights in for the hearts and minds of all Mexican girls and boys.
I've never seen that. That sounds fabulous.
I think you can catch it on YouTube. It's in Espanol, but I think
it's in English. It's dubbed in English. Yeah. Hold on a sec. Santa Claus. Give me a second. I didn't prepare for this.
Well, we
one.
Should talk about all the spooky Christmas movies.
Okay. What's your favorite?
I've talked about it on your show before, but I really think Rare Exports is one to really seek out. I feel like we've talked about it in the past, but
Rare Exports. I don't know if we have. I think we saw that on Christmas Day here in Chicago a few years ago. I really enjoyed it.
It's great.
Fassler didn't care for it too much, but I don't think he likes movies that are subtitled, because I believe it's a Norwegian film where this little boy, he's obsessed with Santa Claus, but not like the Santa Claus that, you know, we know today, the Santa Claus of years past, who was kind of, you know, a mischievous, kind of evil, child-napping person.
And yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. I mean, hopefully your listeners are at a little bit of an elevated... taste level where they can handle subtitled movies, you know?
Yes.
You don't want to discount subtitled films. Foreign films are great.
It's very disturbing, though.
What is?
That movie. It's like, Santa Claus just comes across as this monster.
Well, he is.
Yeah, but it's great. It's not sort of like Silent Night, Deadly Night, where Santa Claus is just walking around with an axe. Like, there's a whole mystery to it, and I think it's really good. And I really think people should watch it.
Well, I believe it's on Netflix.
But I do like Silent Night, Deadly Night also. I think that's a really fun movie.
And there was also a horror film with a snowman in it that kills people.
Frosty the
Snowman.
Yeah,
Jack Frost.
Jack Frost, yes.
Oh my God, Jack Frost is great. If you just like... really stupid camp horror, that's really good. Black Christmas is really good if you like more of a early 80s, late 70s. Black Christmas is actually sometimes considered the first ever slasher film.
Oh, really?
That before Black Christmas, there wasn't... Yeah, a lot of people give the credit to Halloween, but Black Christmas was before Halloween, and it really is just about a killer at Christmas time terrorizing a sorority house, you know? So girls being, picked off one by one. It's quite good. Margot Kidder's in it. She plays a drunk. Ironic.
Laughing at her disability.
Poor typecasting her. Hey, so anyways, you were asking about the 1959 film Santa Claus. Was directed by Rene Cardona and was released in Mexico in 1960. But then later on released in the United States, dubbed by and distributed by the great K. Gordon Murray, the creator of the Kiddie Matinee, who also narrates the movie under the alias Ken Smith. And it's absolutely ludicrous, crazy, surreal. It stars Santa Claus, Satan, Merlin, and a herd of robotic reindeer, which are travel the earth to try to save the souls and spirits of all the Mexican boys and girls. It's wild.
And you liked it?
Well, it was. If you're going to watch it, it's best to watch the Mystery Science Theater version, where they're actually like commenting on it because it's hysterically funny. And it's in the movie in itself, you can actually catch it on. It used to be on Google Video, but now I believe it's available on YouTube. You can just search Santa Claus, K. Gordon Murray, and you'll find it. And it's really a remarkable film.
Do you think that I should watch that since I'll be in Mexico for Christmas? I should watch it.
It definitely has a lot of Mexican sensibility, because Mexicans are very fascinated with a cartoonized version of the devil, and they think it's very appropriate for children.
Yeah.
Whereas Americans, like, if you have, Christmas with the Devil. It's, you know, it's kind of an adult thing, but this was definitely like, you know, if you play the Loteria cards, those little Mexican card decks, there's one that comes with the devil on it, you know, and it's like...
Right.
With Americans, I mean, we've sanitized Christmas so much because, you know, in the past, it used to be kind of scary and you'd have Krampus and all those other kinds of things. But now, because Christmas is such a commercial holiday and you don't want to put anything in there that's going to scare people. You just want people to just buy.
No negativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't scare the children too much.
Like, you know what they're doing in Russia for the holidays? They're setting up an Eye of Sauron to celebrate the latest... Hobbit movie release.
They are?
They're setting
oh,
up
really?
In Moscow and their skyscrapers, they're setting up a giant Eye of Sauron to promote and celebrate the movie's
so it's
going to
look like a giant anus in the sky? A big giant brown eye?
Yeah. Maybe Kirk Cameron
is
right.
I'm so over The Hobbit.
It's kind of a terrible franchise.
Oh my God, especially after, you know, Lord of the Rings was so great,
mm-hmm.
and then The Hobbit's just such a, I mean, God, you have to, like, drink, like, 10 cups of coffee just to stay awake, you know? It's so boring.
I didn't even see, I saw part one in the movie theaters, part two I didn't even bother seeing. Is part three even out yet?
Well, December 11th.
It's coming out December.
It's coming out, yeah.
I mean, it's a snooze fest. It's like, why would they take this one? They could have done this movie in like one movie, but they're like, let's make the money.
Well, it's even like Hunger Games where they're taking the third part and splitting into two films. I just don't like this trend that Hollywood's having is like, let's milk a movie franchise as much as we can to the detriment of the film itself.
Well, I think like with Hunger Games 2, though, it's the same with like the Harry Potter is like that last book is so long that they're like, there's no way we can get it all into one thing. So you have to split it up.
Well, is the Hunger Games really long, though, the last book?
I think it's longer, yeah, than the other two.
Because like with the final Harry Potter book, it made total sense, right? I mean, it was like super long. And you know, it didn't feel like, especially that final movie, it didn't feel like it was split in half. Whereas this Hunger Games movie, I liked it, I enjoyed it, but it definitely felt like half a book.
Mm.
Didn't one of the Harry Potter movies take place during the holidays, too?
We always do.
Oh, I think a Christmas lot of them
break.
Do. They yeah. all, yeah. Because they go throughout, like, a school year. So I guess you could say all the Harry Potter movies would be appropriate holiday watching.
Well, it's kind of weird, right? They're you know, almost like
some of them touch more on the Christmas. They have like the Christmas ball and Christmas things.
But they're not like, you know, Christmas is about Jesus.
No.
Where that's how we get our powers from is because we touched Jesus and now so we're...
No, but some woman is rewriting the Harry Potter stories, I believe, to make them more Christian.
What?
Yeah, she's taking out like the references to like to witchcraft and everything comes from Jesus and the Lord and that kind of
stuff.
Oh,
story. That sounds like it'll be really good. We're going to take a Harry Potter book.
But you know,
and we're going to take out all elements of magic, witchcraft, and wizardry.
I mean, when Harry Potter first came out, I worked with this girl, and she said she was reading stuff from Harry Potter in the class, and she had this one kid. He was like shaking his head and looked visually disturbed, and he's like, "My parents said I cannot read that book because it's from the devil." And she's just like, "You know, this is a Chicago school teacher," and she's thinking to herself, "My God, it's not like I'm in Oklahoma somewhere, but."
Yeah,
right.
There's people that are really just freaked out about the idea of witchcraft. Whereas, you know, we grew up Catholic and we were fascinated with the idea of witchcraft and read all sorts of books on witches and sorcery and stuff. It's just, you know, some people.
Yeah, no, I loved it, obviously.
Well, in Chile, a woman just got arrested for being a pot dealer. And when the police came in to bust her, they found that her family Christmas tree was a humongous marijuana plant.
Really?
And she was bragging to her neighbors like, the kids got a beautiful Christmas tree and they're going to have a wonderful holiday season.
Wow. You could do that in California, because people in California, you can grow your own pot now, can't you?
Yeah, I see this like catching on and becoming a thing where people decorate their pot plant with Christmas lights.
That's hilarious.
Which reminds me of one of my favorite
Christmas. What are you guys doing for Christmas?
Well, I'm sorry. I just got to tell you really fast. Reminds me of one of my favorite stoner movies, which is also a Christmas movie, is Harold and Kumar's Christmas in 3D, which has a special appearance by Feast of Fun guest Esteban Andres Cruz, who you guys might remember for his song I'm Happy to Be a Homo. And he, alongside with Machete, what's the name of the actor?
Daniel Trujillo.
Danny Trujillo. They have a wonderful exchange scene where he's the son and he's the Machete. Danny Trujillo is the angry father. And they're trying to decorate the Christmas tree. And Esteban turns to his dad and says, "Daddy, I can't hang the Christmas presents right because one of my eyes is all messed up."
It's a stupid movie.
It's a really stupid movie, and actually it was the last Harold and Kumar movie ever made before one of the guys went into the Obama administration.
Kumar did for
Kumar,
a while.
Yeah.
For a bit. Peaches, wait, Christmas?
I never saw that.
No? You should definitely see it. It's actually pretty fun.
It's a lot of fun.
And if you can see it in 3D.
We saw it in 3D. It was actually pretty good. It was the one 3D movie that I actually like.
Well, then you obviously didn't see Piranha 3D.
What's that?
Piranha 3D. Where David Hasselhoff's amputated penis floats right in front of your face.
What?
Ew.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see it.
That's part of it. It was fabulous.
Oh, Piranha.
Shut up. Piranha.
Piranha. I was like, Piranha? What's a Piranha? Oh, Piranha.
Peaches, what Christmas movies are you looking forward to coming out in the theaters shortly?
Oh my God, that's a good question. I'm actually looking forward to, and I hope they do a good job, that movie about Alan Turing.
Oh yeah, he was gay, you know.
Yeah.
They chemically castrated him.
He invented the computer. I hope that's good.
We would all be speaking German right now if it wasn't for Alan Turing.
Really?
Yeah. They say that he helped win the war.
Well, yeah. He broke the Enigma code.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, right.
Yeah, in case you don't know enough about history, but you're going to go see a movie about a historical character. You're like, oh, my God, he was gay. I think
heard a rumor that they were like downplaying that, but it seems like that would be impossible to do.
Well, they do mention, I think that there was a story of like, why isn't there a gay love scene, a sex scene? And Benedict Cumberbatch is kind of like, well, I mean, I suppose we could have done something, but it didn't really seem germane to the plot. But it is addressed because I think that he has there's one scene that I saw where he has a chat with one of the guys, and the guy's just like, well, you can't tell anybody, it's illegal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when I was in Manchester in October, I got to see like the park where he used to hang out, and they had a statue there that was of him. And I guess it's, you know, where he's from and everything, and created a lot of that work. So it was kind of, it was exciting to know the movie was coming out, and then we were there and we got to see his monument. And I guess I'm excited for, I don't know when it's coming out, but Into the Woods might be fun.
That's coming out Christmas Day, same as Selma is also coming out that day.
Oh, I'm really excited for Selma.
Mm-hmm.
I think that trailer is just so well cut and well done. And of course, you know, I'm a huge Oprah fan, and she produced it. And Selma's directed, you know, for a big budget film, it's so rare that a film is directed by a woman, and then that it's a black woman is so unusual, you know, in such great, you know, it's great progress because it just rarely ever happens. So thank you, Oprah, because I'm sure, you know, Oprah being the producer had a lot to say in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who directed it, I forget her name, but she's the first African-American woman to ever win the directing prize at Sundance.
For people who are not familiar with Selma, it's a movie about, what is it, the Catwoman in her early days?
Yeah, you're an idiot. It's about Martin Luther King Jr. And the riots that happened in Selma.
Oh. I thought it had something to do with the Batman.
Or the Simpsons.
Which, actually, the Batman 2 is another Christmas movie that takes place. That people don't know about.
No.
Yeah, it takes place at Christmas.
Yes. Chester J. Copperpot and Catwoman's in it. And all your favorite villains all awkwardly fighting Batman.
Now, Night of the Museum is Secret of the Tomb is coming out December 19th. And that'll be awkward to see... Mr. Williams,
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams after his death. And I want to say that I saw in the trailer that like there's some kind of allusion to dying. They allude something, say something about dying, and I'm just kind of
Well, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, that was kind of weird in The Hunger Games seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this, because in 1 month we got, what is it, Jurassic Park, Star Wars, there's a third film franchise from the 90s that's coming back, and I'm just blanking out on it, but it seems like we're getting like all these old franchises are being revitalized in the same month, right? It was Terminator, Jurassic Park, and Star Wars.
Oh yeah, I mean, it seems like that is just the sort of the sad trend anymore. Is like everything was just sort of these recycled versions of successful franchises,
and it's not exclusive to movies. Also, Broadway is doing it too with the "I Love Lucy" live. I'm like, what year is this?
Well, the thing is like once you know these things is like once you make a movie, you have a fan base, so you just kind of like it's easier to make it again because you know people are already going to buy into it, so you just go from there. But I'm kind of interested to see, because it seems kind of interesting this new Terminator is going to, the Terminator is going to be an old Arnold Schwarzenegger taking care of a young Sarah Connor. So they're going back further. And so she's not going to be an adult when she meets the Terminator. Now she's going to be a child.
A little girl.
Oh, yeah.
And then Star Wars is set into the future and it's about the rise of a Dark Lord again.
But a lot of people are saying that it's basically following the plot of the books. So if you've been reading the Star Wars books all along, you won't be surprised. But there are black stormtroopers.
Yes, there are, as is evidenced in the first shot of the trailer.
Did you notice all the commotion over the crucifix lightsaber? And they're saying that's a terrible design?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything in those trailers is going to be open for debate and discussion and dissection and as soon as I saw the lightsaber, it was kind of like, okay, well, let's see what everyone has to say about this. But is it because it's a crucifix?
Yeah, it's a religious connotation, you know, and it's an upside down crucifix.
I know, right? It's satanic.
Yeah. He's really evil. In two religions.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I didn't think the trailer was that, like, I didn't think it was that, I didn't get that excited about the trailer, nor did I think it looked like the movie was going to be bad. Yeah. You know, I kind of watched it, and I was like, oh, okay, whatever. You know,
thrilling.
I didn't have a strong reaction one way or the other, yeah.
The visuals weren't very compelling. It was kind of all stuff we'd really kind of seen before. There was nothing to say, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. We'll see. Peaches, right, why didn't you post a screenshot of a But I'm a Cheerleader on your Facebook wall today? Do you have something you'd like to announce?
I wasn't going to announce it because I'm not supposed to, because the press conference isn't until the end of the week. But when does this podcast air?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Ah, suck it. I'll just put it out there because you guys are special. And I don't know how many listeners there are who would report me to the SF Sketchfest. So every year I partner with the SF Sketchfest to co-produce an event as part of their festival. And this year, last year we did Cabin Boy, which was super weird. And the year before that we did, I don't remember, Welcome to the Dollhouse and The year before that, we did Rocky Horror with Barry Bostwick, and it's always a big, fun show. And so this year, Natasha Lyonne and I are going to reunite on stage for one night only, and we're going to do a Peaches celebration of But I'm a Cheerleader together. So that happens January 27th, and I believe tickets go on sale this Sunday, but it'll all be run through SF Sketchfest. So I'm really looking forward to it. Natasha and I have been texting up a storm, and I haven't seen her in probably since last spring. So we're long overdue for a visit and to do a show together. And, of course, you know, as part of the interview, I'm going to, you know, talk to her all about Orange is the New Black and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And there might even be some other surprises.
RuPaul
that
will be
I can't
there?
Announce yet.
Will RuPaul
no,
be there?
No, not RuPaul.
RuPaul.
I think RuPaul's busy at the end of January.
What's she doing?
She's not doing anything. Our show's already been recorded.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't it start then?
Yeah, but that's okay.
She's at home
eating
chips.
Doesn't she have premiere parties and interviews to attend to?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That stuff.
That kind of
her
stuff.
Her role wasn't that big in that movie anyway. It was memorable, though.
Actually, she's really funny in it.
Yeah,
you know,
she's actually really good in that movie. Better than the Brady Bunch movie.
Yeah, I just watched it. She's hilarious. Like, she actually has a pretty big part, you know? And yeah. I love what her part is. I mean, it's so funny. I mean, to watch her, you know, teaching these boys how to be butch and stuff.
Now,
it's
don't
really,
sissy
really
that
good.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's really fun to watch it all these years later because I hadn't seen it in a while. And it's one of those movies that's been requested from Peaches fans for years, you know, especially lesbians. And I've always thought, like, oh, yeah, I've got to do But I'm a Cheerleader. And I had actually met the director, Jamie Babbitt, a few years ago and had become friendly with her. And then, of course, you know, making a movie starring Natasha Lyonne, it's been in the back of my head. And it's one of those things where I've been very, very familiar with the movie and its cult, but I hadn't actually seen the movie in maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And so rewatching it last week, you know, knowing that I'm doing the show and starting to put the performance together, I was just so impressed with how well it holds up. It's still completely hilarious and really fun, and the characters are super lovable. And Natasha and Clea Duvall and Melanie Lynskey are all really adorable. And RuPaul is hilarious. And Mink Stole is hilarious, and Bud Cort and Kathy Moriarty. Like, it has an amazing cast.
Well, it's kind of interesting, too, because, like, well, that was filmed, when was that, like, 99 or something? 98, 99 came out?
Yeah,
And
exactly.
So it's kind of interesting to see how that whole ex-gay thing now has pretty much been thoroughly debunked, and in fact is illegal in some places. I believe, like, in California, you can't, like, try and ex-gay somebody anymore.
Right.
You know, and what they don't show, though, either in that movie, though, is like really just, you know, in the past, just how horrible those kinds of treatment camps can be for people, and like with corrective rape and, you know, giving people, you know, medicine and making them watch gay porn to make them sick. And so, like, you know, all sorts of electroshock therapy, all sorts of really just horrible torture in the name of ex-gay therapy.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's kind of like almost this sort of Disney version of it. Like, like the art direction, everything about it is sort of fantastical and coming from a place of comedy. But you're right. It actually is about something super horrible. And definitely maybe it's not as big of an American problem as it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago. But it's certainly still a problem around the world.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk to what is
there definitely are... You know, religions that believe they can cure people.
And I'll never forget interviewing one drag queen. I believe it was Anaconda from, you know, San Francisco, who's a former Mormon, and just the hell she went through, and the, you know, electroshock therapy. They gave her kind of medicine to make her vomit while she watched porn. It was just like, it was actually, I mean, it is bona fide torture. And it's like, to survive something like that's incredible.
I guess did you hear about this? Anonymous or WikiLeaks are saying that they're going to be releasing a new document that details extensively the United States, history of torture, and it's just going to be shocking revelations.
Really?
Just in time for Christmas.
Lovely.
So the Stephen Ray, the actor who starred in The Crying Game, was recently interviewed about why didn't they show a big giant cock?
Why wasn't his penis erect when they showed it? Who asked this question? Did that ever come into your mind? Why wasn't your penis hard in a major blockbuster?
Why was I hard? Why weren't you hard? And he said, because it wasn't right for the
You are allowed a penis, but not an erect penis. A lot of men will tell you, sadly, it isn't always erect when it's supposed to be. But anyway, that's just a technicality. Most people are just shocked at the presence of the penis, not whether or not it was aroused.
But you're talking about Jay Davison, not Stephen Ray.
I believe Stephen Ray was having sex with Jay Davison and then discovers that Jay Davison is transgender, and so...
Oh, so they were asking Stephen Ray why his penis wasn't erect?
Why wasn't he turned on by the fact he was having sex with a pretty lady until he discovered that she wasn't...
But they didn't show... They showed Jay Davison's penis, not Stephen Ray's.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But why wasn't either of them hard, it's like...
Well, I think he's talking about why isn't the other person, why stupid. They showed his that person's penis, why didn't they show that person's penis hard?
I see. So the idea is, because they show Jay Davison's penis, who, of course, is the trans woman in the movie.
Yeah.
I guess that is an interesting question. She was in the throes of passion, supposedly. So why wouldn't she be hard? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to get an R rating.
Well, also, maybe she was on hormones, too, and I think sometimes hormones can interfere with your ability to get an erection.
That's true.
My hormones get in the way of me getting my dick hard. TGI Fridays are they being sued by a journalist, a female journalist, that went to their restaurant?
Well, I don't think she's suing them, but it's making the news.
So it's making the news. They have these drones that are decorated with mistletoe and then have a little cameras attached, nicknamed the Kiss Cam. And they've made their first appearance in the UK in November, and now, I guess, are they hitting the United States, right? Mm-hmm. And so a fertile journalist in New York had her nose cut open when one of the gadgets was flown around the restaurant. She said, I've done some crime scene reporting. I survived 9/11. I didn't get a scratch on any of those assignments, but this one is so bizarre to go into a restaurant and come out bloody and injured.
My God.
Watch out for those flying drones.
And they're a must-have Christmas item this year. Everybody's buying little drones with video cameras on them and giving them to their kids. So if you step outside of the house this holiday season, watch out, because there might be flying blades coming at your face.
Well, somebody had one of those drones too, and they flew it over Market Days, which is the big gay festival here in town. But I didn't find it very compelling, because you're just watching this camera of people milling about on the street, because it's from 100 feet up, and then also too, you're just seeing the tops of their heads.
I liked it. I saw the footage. Yeah. I thought it was fun. It's certainly
for 10 seconds,
bird's eye view.
Ooh. Have you seen that really cool drone video where the drone goes into Chernobyl?
No.
Areas that haven't been inhabited for 40 years or whatever. That's really interesting.
They say there are a lot of people crashing Chernobyl, but that it's illegal to be in there, obviously, because you'll drop dead. But they do give tours of it. You just have to go in and out really fast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
So there's all these people that go in there and to take pictures, but they're like, I don't feel so good afterwards.
Well, there's also video footage, too, of this drone flying around and a peregrine falcon attacks it and takes it down. And then just and you see it fall to the earth and go down. Those vicious falcons.
Peaches, what are you getting your husband for Christmas? Or your boyfriend, sorry.
Well, I can't tell you that. What if he listens to the show?
Well, why don't you
Well, he's Muslim. Do you have to get him anything?
Oh, yeah.
No, technically. But we do exchange gifts, for the tradition, because it's kind of one great thing about Nihat is, like, he really embraces American traditions. Like, he loves Thanksgiving. And even, you know, I had to make him his own pecan pie, you know, because he was so excited about it all. And he wanted to make sure that he had enough pie. So I think he associates Christmas with being more like an American tradition than something very religious. Like, it was interesting for me to learn that they actually have, you know, a version of Christmas in Turkey, which is like a, you know, primarily Muslim country. But they still do, because it's about, you know, commerce and selling stuff and exchanging gifts and stuff. So there is kind of a version of Christmas. There's just no Christianity attached to it. But it's more about the new year, you know, and exchanging gifts at the new year and celebrating kind of like the holiday season, but it's just not Christmas per se. So we will exchange gifts. We exchanged gifts last year. Last year I got him a camera. But this year I don't want to say, but it,
girl,
I mean,
I
want to
be your boyfriend.
Hey, I get you good stuff for Christmas.
I was like, a camera? That's expensive.
What? It was a nice camera, yeah. What are you getting each other?
Lots of hugs. I don't care what I get for Christmas as long as it's Mark that I got.
Oh, you're so
sweet. Sick, Nick.
Peaches, let's talk about Kathy Bates' accent on American Horror Story. She says it's supposed to be a Baltimore accent. And you from the Baltimore region, can you attest to her accuracy and her accent on this season?
It's funny because you guys are like the third or fourth people to ask me about this. And I will say this. I don't know that I think of it so much as Baltimore specific, but it is definitely Eastern Shore, Maryland, for sure. So you would hear people in Baltimore speak like that, but I would say that it would be to a lesser degree. But when you go to the Eastern Shore, especially across the Chesapeake, where the communities are a little more isolated, it is spot on, dead on accurate, and completely reminds me of home. And yeah, she's doing an amazing job. I'm surprised that she says Baltimore because it's really more like, I don't know, rural Maryland than, you know, it's more like coastal, you know, people who, you know, have been crabbers for a million years and, you know, they talk like this and they want to get water from the ocean and she's doing it really well.
You sound just like her.
Yeah.
That's how they do it
there. Yeah,
huh?
I grew up there. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, do you feel like seeing her in
I can talk like it for days. You know, I mean, I grew up there, so I know how to talk like it.
You should just talk like that all the time.
Yeah. Peach has
well,
a new
funny,
voice.
For Romy and Michelle, afterwards, people kept going like, wow, I can't believe you did her accent so well. And the screenwriter from Romy and Michelle came and she was complimenting me on the accent and saying like, wow, you really did your homework because that Mira Sorvino accent is so bizarre. And I had read these interviews where she thought she was doing a Valley Girl, but every time I listened to her in the movie, I'm like, no, she's doing like, it's like a version of a Maryland accent. So, you know, I just basically did that for the show. I mean, not as extreme as Kathy Bates or anything, but you know, but people loved it. I'm convinced now that Mira Sorvino's accent in Romy and Michelle is definitely Maryland.
Well, now that you do it, I'm having flashbacks to the movie. Do my dad invented Stick-It notes or Post-It notes or something?
Okay. Well, I invented Post-Its. Yes, that's what I do. I invented Post-Its. I can't believe how fierce I look. These are all lines from the
show. Impressive. Yeah. Do you feel like you've gotten so used to seeing Kathy Bates with a beard that when you see her without the beard now, she looks weird?
Well, I mean, how many of your listeners will be pissed off if I... Oh, my God. Can you hear that loud siren going
by? I do. Honey, coming to get you.
Sizzling. It's because you're so hot. You're
on fire.
I live
in a very, very urban community. I think American Horror Story Freak Show is definitely the most beautiful, stylistically.
Yeah.
But after that last episode, I don't know. I'm a little frustrated. I kind of couldn't believe it, but I don't, I don't want to say what happened, but, you know, I don't know, or maybe I should just say, okay, a spoiler alert, but Kathy Bates was the best part of the season, you know, and what a bummer, you know. That was
I don't
just...
think I've seen that last episode.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, but I'm assuming she gets killed and killed off.
Sorry about it, you guys.
That's okay. Listen, I don't. Doesn't rob me of the enjoyment.
She had cancer. Yeah. You know?
So she gets killed, or does she die of her cancer?
I don't want to say.
Don't say.
It would be a huge spoiler, and then your listeners will be pissed off at me. But I did give a warning. I did give a spoiler warning.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Listen, if you don't want something spoiled, stay off the internet, people. Okay.
You don't want something spoiled. Don't listen to me. Okay.
Oh, Peaches. We consider you to be one of our greatest treasures, both as friends.
I know.
What?
Just kidding. I'm totally kidding. If you were complimenting me in the whole time, I was just going, I know.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, I adore you guys, too. I'm glad that we got to do another podcast before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You're so much fun.
And even though you guys... take me for granted a little bit, and I'm Brian Sweeney's replacement, and you replaced me with Devin Green for your, your wedding.
I have to say she did do a good job, though.
Didn't she do a good job?
She did an admirable job. I will say that she did a very, very. I'm a huge fan of hers. Well, that's why it hurt even more, because you replaced me with someone so fabulous. It would have been easier if you'd replaced me, you know, with I don't know. Heckleaner or something, then I would have been like, okay, well, I guess they wanted to second up.
Well, how about this? We're having a ring ceremony in July. Why don't you be the officiant for that ceremony?
Unless we change our minds.
Good.
Will
you
do it?
I mean, that's the thing. You guys have to stand.
So maybe we should discuss this first.
Listen, what matters is the egos of our guests and not our relationship.
Yeah, I mean, we both know that whatever you say on the show is meaningless.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. What? We both know it's hollow promise. Yes, I would be glad to do it. I'm glad that you guys have had so many lengthy conversations and really come to this conclusion.
What conclusion?
That you both feel strongly that I have to be part of that major life event.
I mean, if you feel strongly about doing it, it's like, I think you're
fantastic.
Well,
you guys have to come to San Francisco.
To do what? To get married?
To do your vows. Yeah, to get married.
Honey, we're expecting every friend of ours that lives in Chicago to pack up and go to San Francisco?
Yep, and I hope Patricia Fairnos is listening. Get on it. Get your plane ticket.
Honey, we ain't got no money. This is why we're doing it at a Chinese restaurant. We're broke.
Well, remember when those people, they have a Kickstarter campaign for their wedding, remember?
Oh, yeah.
What was it?
Morneau?
David
Eric.
And Mornay.
Mornay. Eric and Mornay.
Eric and Mornay.
Okay, will you guys send me the date?
There are four weddings.
And even if I'm unable to, if I get replaced again, maybe I could just attend. Maybe I could just sit in the back and watch.
And then when someone says, does anybody have any objections? You go,
that would be fabulous. And well, I'll do it with my Maryland accent.
I don't
think. That's Kathy Bates.
Yeah. That'd be good.
I don't think that you are should be doing that. Yeah.
That's not a good one.
I'm sorry. I'm just imitating what you just did.
One easy way to get it going is to work on your O's. The O is all A. So if you were saying no, it would be new.
No.
Ocean. Let's get out of ocean. Swimming.
I'm going to the ocean.
Bye.
You like the Orioles. The A's. It's all about the A's.
You could release a Hooked on Phonics for Baltimore girls.
Hooked on Ebonics.
I should. And you know what's funny is I always growing up thought it sounded so tacky and trashy and awful. And then, of course, after, you know, I moved away, I realized, like, oh, this is part of, like, that John Waters universe, because I didn't growing up watching those old movies of John's, I didn't hear the accent. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really think that much of it. I was more enamored by, you know, their outrageous behavior and their costumes. It was later when people are like, we love that accent. That accent is hilarious. And I thought, oh, God, I really tried hard to get rid of that accent. I should have hung on to it.
You had an accent growing up?
Well, my sister still does. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you grow up in Maryland, you kind of talk like that. I mean, not to maybe the degree that Kathy Bates does, obviously, but yeah, it's there. I mean, even when I go to the Baltimore-Washington International Airport, like, the woman on the loudspeaker's like, please know, if your car is in the white zone, it will be towed. And I always think it's so funny, because I'm like, I'm home. I might not notice it as much.
Next podcast we do together, please just do the Baltimore accent the whole time.
Oh my God, I will. I would love to do that. So just remind me, and I'll totally do it.
It's very charming.
How long can you sustain that accent?
I could probably do it the whole time.
Like, from starting now for the rest of your life.
I should. You know, when I used to get drunk back in the day, people would be like, oh my God, why are you talking like that? Because I think sometimes you just revert.
Because kind of a phenomena that I've noticed, like, college students do when you're still young and developing your identity, is that you take on a new voice. And so people who grew up in regions that are very distinct in the way they talk but went to theater school and studied diction tend to come out speaking like, you know, like Alaska, just very distinguished and very intent. And if you talk to the rest of Alaska's family, they're all like, how are you guys doing?
That is not true. They don't listen.
Listen to Corey in Bros for Cash. Listen to the way Corey talks and the way Alaska talks. And there's very two different dialects happening there.
I've met Alaska's family. And yeah, nobody talks like Alaska does.
Nobody talks like Alaska does, but nobody in Erie talks like Alaska does.
This is how people in Erie talk. Do you want me to do my Erie accent?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. Yen's going down to the creek.
That's Pittsburgh.
That's pretty good, actually.
That's Pittsburgh. People in Erie don't say Yen's.
That does sound like Mark's sister.
Pittsburgh, Erie, tomato, tomato. Come on, Mark.
It's completely different. And my sisters can, like, live in Pittsburgh, and they can put on a pretty good Pittsburgh accent. The Pittsburgh accent's pretty, pretty awful. I think that they did a contest recently.
It's beautiful.
Which accent is worse, Pittsburgh, like, of all the accents in the country? And it was Pittsburgh. The finalists were Pittsburgh versus Reading, Pennsylvania, or Scranton, PA, and I believe Pittsburgh won.
It's pretty bad. Sharon actually says yens for real, non-ironically.
Well, Sharon says yins because she lives in Pittsburgh. She didn't grow up saying yins.
Exactly.
You know, and they all say yinzer, and they do it for fun. Yinzers.
But I've gone, you know, having gone to art school and theater school, it's like I hear that phenomena happening. And even Eartha Kitt, for example, is somebody who had a similar thing happen to them, whereas they studied diction so much as young people that it changed the way they speak and have a very distinct way of talking, where all the words get enunciated perfectly.
Well, I know quite a few people who've studied diction.
Oh, Peaches, you know, the time has come to end this podcast, but I could do it all day long, all week long, you know that. With you.
Well, it was great talking to you guys. And if I don't talk to you beforehand, because I'm going to Mexico in a few weeks, Happy New Year!
And happy holidays!
Happy Merry Christmas and happy New Year!
May your holidays be merry and bright.
And we'll talk soon.
Okay, darling. Thanks.
Because I have more to announce.
What?
Next time I come to the show. No, not right now, but I'm working on something big that you guys will be excited about.
Is your reality TV show finally going to happen?
No, that's still being pitched, and they're raising funds for a documentary and this and that. But I have seen what they call the sizzle reel, and it looks good. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Who knows? I think it looks good.
Girl, it's like, you know, what is the world waiting for?
Well, they haven't really started pitching, to be totally honest. Oh. Like, they've been working on all these assets and I don't know. I don't really understand it.
Honey, by the time they're done pitching, you're going to be, we'll all be 6 feet under.
I know. Hello?
It's like,
I'm like the present.
You ain't getting any younger.
It's true.
For Christmas, I want Peaches Christ in a box.
On that lovely note, have a wonderful holiday.
Bye, sweetheart.
Bye, sweetie.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Peaches Christ lives in San Francisco, California. Check her out at peacheschrist.com.
You really need to consult with me before you start inviting more people to get us married.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I thought we had, like, I thought it would be a good compromise. I didn't realize she was, like, upset about it.
Well, I don't even remember when you invited her. I was like,
you're still
did?
Like, we did.
We did.
I think we did talk about it on the phone briefly. Oh, but, okay. You know, Devin was like, I want to do it. I want to do it, you know?
Oh, sure. Put it on Devin.
Yeah. Blame Devin.
I don't want to blame Devin for anything. She's a sweetheart.
She's an angel.
And so is Joshua.
Yes. Who's Joshua? Oh, Peaches.
Peaches,
yes.
Christ.
I was like, Joshua? Who's that?
Peaches Christ lives in San Francisco. You can find out more about her at peacheschrist.com.
I just said that.
Oh, you did?
Oh. Yeah. For Christmas, I want a husband that listens to me. this will be our first Christmas married together.
I know.
I
feel like we got married a long time ago, though.
Yeah, it's true. Really. Well, you know what it is? I'm really blessed that it took 15 years in our relationship for it to be legally possible for us to get married. And in some ways, it allowed us to mature our relationship to get to this point. And I worry for young couples that are like, it's too easy to get married, you know? When something's too easy, you take things for granted.
You know, they'll sort it out. They'll figure it out. But if you're 21 years old and you're rushing to get to the altar, you better ask yourself the question, why?
Yeah, if you're rushing to get to the altar before you even get, like, your diploma, ask yourself that.
But I think, you know, gay people, they have so many challenges in life that they kind of like are able to sort themselves out sometimes and know who they are a little bit better than some of these straight people. So
every day I thank the Lord that I am not a heterosexual man.
It is a blessing, isn't it?
It is a blessing. You know, problems worth having is all I could say. Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support this holiday season. Why not put some, instead of coal in our stockings? We do appreciate that because it's hard, black, and hot. We'd rather have a little bit of gold coins in our stocking. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a contribution or give to your friends a fabulous Feast of Fun t-shirt at feastoffun.com/store. We have tons of fabulous designs inspired by some of the world's greatest drag queens and drag things like The Shade is Strong with this one. And reading is fundamental.
And one of the best ways to support the show is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to have wonderful guests like we were having all this week, you know, including Joshua Grinnell. Yesterday we had Tranica and Adam Guarino, and later on we're going to have a podcast with Vivacious.
Darling, it's going to be a kiki Christmas, hunty, with Mother Vivacious in the house.
And we wouldn't be able to bring in this fabulous programming if it weren't for you. So thank you very much for your support.
It's great to be able to feature performers like Peaches Christ, who's, you know, right now kind of like at the probably doing extremely well, right?
She's doing
her career.
Well.
There's Joan Waters, who tomorrow she's just getting started. There's Tranica, who's kind of been in the having the ball rolling for several years now. And then there's Vivacious, who, you know, is a historic institution. So we have drag queens of all points in their lives. So you can see like the babies, the birthing, the mature year, the golden years, and the really golden years.
And then next week we have Nadia Ginsberg. She's going to come and talk about what it was like to work with Joan Rivers and about her fabulous web series, Madonna Logs. And then Tommy Hall is back, the real elf on the shelf, and he's going to come and talk about his holiday exploits this season. And Brian Sweeney promises he'll be back next week, so
I'll believe it when I see it.
And then, of course, also too, we'll have our music special,
Incredibly Strange Christmas Music, Volume 7. We've been doing this series as long as RuPaul's Drag Race has been around.
We're doing a best of, plus a few more ones that we just discovered this year.
And if you have a rare, unheard of, but good, like, you know, because it's easy to make lousy music, mm-hmm. but it's even more difficult to make
the contestants of RuPaul's Drag Race.
a piece of Christmas music that you think is extraordinary deserves a second listen, but most people consider it to be disgusting and awkward and weird. That's what we're all about here at Feast of Fun. And if you have anything to share with us, send us a link to it, either through iTunes or on YouTube, mail@feastoffun.com. We'll feature it on our last show of the season, Incredibly Strange Christmas Music, Volume 7, a Hits and Dusties episode.
So you have that to look forward to next week.
Yes.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye.
Bye.